take a deep breath, take the higher road. That's what they always say, as if they know the way. They won't take it from me. But don't ever doubt yourself, it's life ain't just a dream. You make your own, so kick and scream. The people move alike with a never-ending force. You never had the chance, so what you waiting for? The day has come, my friend, cause this is war.
Since the beginning of 2020, when COVID first hit, I have witnessed many changes to our healthcare system, a system that I have been a part of for the past 26 years. From the very beginning, much of what we were doing did not make any logical sense, and it flew in the face of everything that we have historically done as healthcare professionals. Suddenly, it seemed as if the guiding principles of ethical nursing were being so easily dismissed and without question. Of all the things that I have witnessed during these past nearly 3 years, none have been more disturbing to me than the atrocities that have been committed against our most vulnerable populations, including pregnant women, lactating mothers, and women of reproductive age. We will delve into this topic over the next hour and discuss the deeply concerning departure from ethical medical practice. You're listening to Nurses Out Loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I'm your host, Nurse Kimberly Overton. Before we get started today, I do want to encourage our listeners, if you have questions or comments, or perhaps you want to share your own experience with what you're seeing on the front lines of healthcare, you can submit these to any of the hosts by visiting americaoutloud.com/nursesoutloud. From there, you can select the name of the nurse you'd like to direct it to from our drop-down menu. We'd love to hear from you. We encourage all of you to engage in the battle and find your voice in this fight. But until you are able to do that, we will be that voice for you. I have two incredible guests joining me for today's show. I was blessed with the opportunity to meet Dr. James Thorpe during the Inspire Leadership Summit in Orlando. He has been on my list of physicians that I absolutely wanted to connect with because he is doing courageous things on behalf of his patients, and on behalf of humanity. Dr. Thorpe is a board-certified OBGYN and maternal fetal medicine physician with over 43 years of obstetrical experience. While serving as a very busy clinician his entire career, he has also been very active in clinical research with almost 200 publications. Dr. Thorpe has seen over 24,000 high-risk pregnancies in the last 3.5 years. He has served as a reviewer for major medical journals and served on the board of directors for the Society of Maternal Fetal Medicine for 4 years. He served in the United States Air Force as an OBGYN, having been awarded a health profession scholarship for his medical school education. Dr. Thorpe testified in the U.S. Senate under the Bush administration in 2003 for his expertise in treating the fetus as a patient with closed in-utero fetal surgeries and therapies. Most recently, Dr. Thorpe has focused his research on the COVID-19 pandemic and has published over 20 peer-reviewed scientific publications and a book documenting the dangers of the vaccine in women of reproductive age and in pregnancy. Now, when I invited Dr. Thorpe to be on the show, the first thing he said was that he would love to, but who I should really talk to is his colleague and friend, nurse whistleblower, Michelle Gershman. Michelle courageously came forward and reported the explosion of fetal demise that she was witnessing as a NICU nurse. She's a registered nurse and an NAET practitioner who treats allergies and vaccine injuries energetically. I'm so thrilled to have connected with both of them. Dr. Thorpe, Michelle, welcome. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Yes, thank you so much for having us.
So excited to have you both here.
Thank you very much. It's such an honor, Kimberly, to be on your platform.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So wonderful to put a face with your name when we met last week.
Yeah, Yes, I was very excited to see that you were there. I didn't know you were going to be there. And when I saw you, I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to go up and talk with him. I've been wanting to meet you for so long. So it was an incredible honor to do so.
Back at you, sister.
Thank you. Now, as I mentioned in my opening, you know, what we have seen since the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccines, or I'm going to just call them gene therapy. That's probably a more accurate way to describe them, right? But this is unprecedented. You know, we've never done this before with this population. I've worked in obstetrics, and, you know, we would advise pregnant women not to eat deli meat, not to change a litter box. Yet here we are with ACOG recommending that these women receive an experimental injection, which we have no idea what the ingredients are. There's not been any clinical trials that have been completed. My mind is blown. Dr. Thorpe, what was your initial reaction when you saw these recommendations come down?
Horrified.
Yeah.
Because I think that published extensively over the last couple of years, and we've seen some very, very concerning and published very concerning trends, and the association of the vaccines, the COVID-19 genetic therapy, as you put it, more aptly, more correctly. So, like in our most current study that we talked about last week, that we just published, so we're comparing governmental data, CDC and FDA's own government data, and we look at genetic therapy injections in pregnancy compared with that of the influenza vaccines. So the influenza vaccines have been approved for use in pregnancy for about 284 months at the time of this study that we published. And of course, only about 18 months for the COVID-19 vaccines. And of course, the CDC and the FDA, they say that very meticulously, very specifically on their website, they state that if there is a twofold or greater risk of an adverse event with one vaccine compared to another, then that's a danger signal. Well, as you saw last week when I presented the data at the meeting, we saw massive increases. For example, in women that received the COVID-19 vaccines prior to pregnancy, there was a massive increase in menstrual abnormalities. I'm not talking about just minor spotting or late period or whatever, early period. No, I'm talking about massive bleeding, vaginal bleeding. And this was a 1,200-fold risk factor in the COVID-19 vaccine compared to the influenza vaccines. A 1,200-fold increase. That's 120,000% increase. 120,000% increase. And then in my pregnant patients, I see a 57-fold increase in miscarriage. 57-fold. That's way over the CDC and the FDA's safety limit, way over. And it's very dangerous. And then with stillbirth, a 38-fold increase in COVID-19 vaccines compared with the control group of the influenza vaccines. So there's absolutely no uncertainty about this. If this weren't concerning enough, I can produce well over 30 other completely independent sources from around the world that document the exact same concerns that we published from the governmental data. And in fact, if anything, it's even worse. So then comes our brave, courageous Michelle Gershman, RN, from California, who is so and such a courageous, young, brilliant woman. And she gets this data straight from the hospital administration in a 1.5-page email. So Take it away, Michelle.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. So first of all, before we get to the data that I received, I've been a nurse for 5 years, and the first 3 years I worked on the heart floor, and, you know, the population was mostly older people who had a lot of comorbidities. And so it was a lot of, you know, a lot of sicker people. And then I was so happy to go to the postpartum floor to take care of newborns, healthy newborns, because I felt like the workload would be much more rewarding for me to be able to, you know, see these brand new babies and, you know, send these healthy moms home with their healthy babies. So I was on postpartum for a year. I went to that floor in 2020, and, you know, that's when COVID was rampant, I guess. But the vaccines hadn't come out yet or anything. And some moms would deliver their babies and they would be positive for COVID, but they weren't necessarily sick. And they would go home and their pregnancy or their delivery was healthy. Their babies were healthy. They'd go home. And, then in 2021, they started talking about the vaccines coming out, and right away I knew that this was a bad idea, and I knew they would start pushing it on pregnant women. And then, so I was just very observant from the beginning, because I didn't feel right about what was happening. So I just really kept my eyes open. And in about March of 2021, we started having an increase in fetal demises. So a fetal demise is a baby that passed away in utero after 20 weeks. And that's a pretty rare occurrence, because if a woman is to miscarry, it's usually before, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. And so I noticed we went from, during COVID, we had maybe one fetal demise every 1 or 2 months. And then once March 2021 came, we started having a fetal demise like every week there was one. And so that's already a huge increase. And also in the NICU at that time, before March 2021, we would always have about an average of 50 babies, because, you know, we work at a critical care hospital in the Central Valley, and it's like a big hospital. So there were always about 50 babies at any time. And in March 2021, all of a sudden there were 80 babies in the NICU, and no one had ever seen that high amount before. And so, you know, March goes by, April, May, June, and these mothers are like sick. There's mothers having strokes. There's mothers having blood clots. There's mothers that have the blood vessels in their eyes burst, so they're all red. And then they're on these critical high blood pressure medications because their blood pressure just shot through the roof. And I couldn't really check every patient, of course, because I can only look at the patient's charts that are assigned to me. But I was noticing that all these health problems were increasing, and there were health problems in the babies. They were doing echocardiograms because babies were having like heart arrhythmias and, you know, just different things that we had never seen before.
So the majority of those babies were having cardiac related issues that were
correct. Correct. Yes. And so I can't check patients' charts that aren't mine, of course, you know, that would be a HIPAA violation. But I could see that the patients that I was receiving, that 90% of these patients that go to this hospital, they have the same OB doctor. And so this OB doctor had most of these mothers. And in his notes, he was saying patient received COVID vaccine on this day. And if there was a patient that didn't receive the COVID vaccine, he would say patient did not receive the COVID vaccine because of this. And he would quote what they said. And then he would say, I provided education on why this patient needs the COVID vaccine while pregnant, you know, to prevent COVID or to prevent the spread of COVID. So I believe when they were coming to see him while pregnant, he was coercing them into getting it. And if he has 90% of the patients, the pregnant mothers that are coming in to deliver, I'm assuming that most of them are vaccinated. And so all of a sudden there's a huge increase in all these problems. And most of these patients have that doctor for their doctor. So I just correlated this. I just based this on observations, but, and I was just seeing what was happening. But I don't, of course, I don't I don't have a way of checking every single chart. That would be, you know, against my practice, but I'm just observing.
Yeah, and we recognize the differences and the changes. When you've worked in healthcare for any, you know, length of time, you
absolutely
start to see trends, you know. And I started to recognize things as well. I had left bedside. I was an ICU nurse throughout the pandemic. I actually left the bedside. I started becoming uncomfortable with the protocols that they were using, the remdesivir, which we know is harmful many times.
Definitely.
It's deadly. You know, it's deadly to patients. And I become uncomfortable because I know that there's treatment available. So I left bedside nursing and I started doing telephone triage nursing for a while. And for a while that was great, but I started to see the trend and the uptick in people, younger, healthier people calling with these awful, the chest pain and the different cardiac things that we were seeing. So I was definitely started keeping my own data. I can remember just having like a little notebook next to my computer here at home. And I would make little notes on how many I was seeing and like what their age range and their vaccination status, because I knew nobody else, like in the CDC apparently was not tracking this information.
Right.
So, you know, we have,
and they should
be. Our job. Exactly. But that's our job, is to be observant and to assess these things. That's part of nursing.
Absolutely.
Dr. Thorpe, when ACOG came down with this recommendation, now historically, do they typically take such a bold stance on these types of issues?
That's a great question, Kimberly. No, this is completely unprecedented.
Yeah.
And this is what's so upsetting. This is an abomination. You know, I'm an old guy. I'm 69 years old. I've been practicing, as you mentioned, for 43 years. I've been held in very, very high esteem with the American College of OBGYN, the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and the Society for Fetal Medicine. And in fact, they honored me, the American Board of OBGYN honored me with an invitation to be a formal examiner, which I did in the 90s, just because of my reputation and my extensive publication. I've received numerous research awards from the Society of Maternal Fetal Medicine. So I know these people. They're all, the people that run these organizations are all younger than me. There's a few that are of my era, my age, of whom I know very well. And they were very good people and very reasonable people. But right now, all three of these organizations are terminally corrupted. And I won't speak as to how they're corrupted. I know they are for certain, because this is unprecedented in medical ethics in the history of humanity. Honestly, this, what is being done right now, makes Pol Pot, Hitler, Mao, and the rest of the terrorists in the world look like altar boys for many different reasons, primarily for the reason that, you know, these other mass murderers were not covert, they were overt. Everybody knew they were evil. And more importantly, they were regional or country specific. They were not worldwide. This is totally different. This lethal genetic therapy went out to pray and has pushed in pregnant women all over the country and all over the world. And they are, these board, the CDC, the FDA, American Board of OBGYN, Society of Maternal Fetal Medicine, American College of OBGYN, they are subverting and providing misinformation while they project their sins on all the physicians and nurses in the United States of America and threaten them and gag them by saying, you're the spreader of misinformation and we're going to terminate you and your credentials and your practice if you, quote, spread misinformation. But this is exactly what these organizations are doing. These organizations, ABOG, SMFM, they are killing millions.
Yes.
And injuring even more with their misinformation. So this is unprecedented. In the history of humanity, everybody knows that our Creator endowed us with innate knowledge, congenital, if you will, knowledge at birth, we're born with. And we all know, you don't have to be a doctor or a nurse, we all know that you don't ever use novel substances in pregnancy, let alone an experimental genetic therapy. So this is why I know that they're corrupt. And, you know, just going back, you know, 60 years ago, 60 plus years ago, you know, Eisenhower and Kennedy's, President Eisenhower and President Kennedy both warned about the potential. This was 60 years ago, the corruption of our country from the military industrial complex. And my president, our president, JFK, was assassinated by our government. Absolutely. He was murdered in a coup d'etat in 1963, almost 60 years ago, because he said that the military industrial complex needed to be splintered into 1,000 pieces and thrown to the wind. And he was murdered 6 months later by our government. Well, what's transpired? We never followed that up. We never punish, and now 60 years later, there's even a huge monster that's grown. It's morphed from the military industrial complex. Now it's incorporated the medical industrial complex. It's all one. It would appear from many experts around the world, including Dr. McCullough and many others, that this is actually a military operation that came out of the DOD and came out of DARPA. So I don't want to talk to that. It's out of my wheelhouse. I can't prove that. But I can prove that this entire medical industrial complex is corrupt, including the boards, all of the boards. The Department of Health and Human Services bribed with over $13 billion of our taxpayer money. They bribed over 270 different, every sector of our society that could influence people to eliminate vaccine hesitancy. That's what they did. I'm talking about all the churches, all the boards, all the major and minor, local and national and international influencers, the medical, the corrupt pharmacy. I mean, every sector of our society has been told that this is safe and effective and necessary. And there couldn't be three bigger lies in the world. It was never necessary. It was never effective. And it was never safe. Exactly. But what are they doing today? They're still, to this very day, pushing.
Yeah, and that's what I don't understand, Dr. Thorpe. You know, if we can touch on that really quickly with the safe and effective lie. I mean, that's all that it is. And actually, that's why I left. I resigned my position as a nurse when I was working telephone triage. I resigned because they had a scripted answer for us when somebody would call and wanted to know if they should get the COVID vaccine. Our answer, it was very scripted, was yes, it's safe and effective, period. And there is no way that I was going to say that, because there's no way that we would be able to know that it was safe and effective. We had no safety data, so that does not meet the standard for informed consent. So, and we know that. We know that as nurses. You know that as a physician. All of these physicians know this doesn't meet the standard, right? So how did we get so many physicians, so many nurses to go along? I mean, is it just because they're dangling, you know, this over their head as far as their licensure and all of that? Like, where is the line? How, I didn't have the provisions to do what I did as a nurse. I'm sure that many, you know, many people don't have the provisions to be able to do that. But where is the line in the sand for people?
Well, I think a lot of medical staff, I believe that it's their livelihood. They're afraid of losing their livelihood. So if they speak out or stand their ground, that they're scared of being fired and not having money. You know, a lot of them have the mortgage and bills and everything. But yeah, I mean, at some point you have to just decide that what's more important, you know, your security of having these things that it's, I don't know, it's like an inner conflict, I'm sure, for a lot of them. But, you know, my mom was killed by remdesivir, and she really absolutely loved babies. And, you know, before the vaccines came out, I used to complain to my mom because I also do not agree with giving hepatitis B vaccines to babies. And I told my mom that I won't do it. And they're getting mad at me for work because I refuse to give them. And I can't stand poking the babies. And my mom just kept saying, don't quit. Those babies need you and you're saving them. And she just really loved babies. And so when my mom died, I was so, I had so much hatred towards the hospital for killing her the way that they did that, you know, I, at that point, I did not care anymore about, you know, I was afraid when my mom was alive, she kept begging me to sneak into the hospital and help her. And I was too afraid to sneak in because I was scared that, I don't know, maybe I'd get arrested or something would happen, you know, gave me anxiety. And I just regret not sneaking in. And then when I got this horrific email in September, I just decided I've had enough. Like, I'm so done. And I, so since I got that email, I sent it off, and I can explain the email in a minute, but I sent it off to somebody from Children's Health Defense, and from there it just kind of went viral. I never really expected all of this to happen, but every time I go on these shows, in the past I would have been so afraid and I would have been nervous and stuttering, and every single show that I've gone on, I don't have 1 ounce of fear. And, you know, I hear my mom's voice telling me every time I think before I go on a show, should I go on the show? Should I speak out for the babies? I hear my mom's voice saying, do not quit. Those babies need you and you're saving them. And so basically they can take my job. They can take my $5,000 retention bonus, which they did. They can, you know, take my money, my try to take my livelihood. But, you know, I'm doing God's work. I work for God. I don't work for them. Amen, and sister. They need to stop.
Amen. You know, and I say that in a speech that I gave, you know, if they want my license, they can have it, because I answer to a much higher authority than any board of nursing or the ANA or the CDC or the FDA or any of that.
So definitely.
I think that, you know, we touched on that a little bit before we started the show today. And we touched on how, you know, I think that we've all been perfectly prepared for and positioned for where we are right now for such a time as this. But you touched on that email, and I do want to talk about that really briefly before we go to break. You know, you were seeing this explosion and the sharp increase of these fetal demises, you know, and seemingly your colleagues were recognizing this as well. You know, I did come across this email that you referred to, and they had you had released this internal email to, I believe you said CDC. And I'd like to just read a very short excerpt from that. It looks like this was sent out September 8th of 2022. And it says, good evening, everyone. Well, it seems that the increase of demise patients that we are seeing is going to continue. There were 22 demises in August, which ties the record number of demises in July of 2021. And so far in September, there have been 7. And it's only the 8th day of the month. Some of those have gone through the EDs and ORs, but there have also been so many in our department. It's a lot of work for you as the bedside RNs, and it's also a lot of work for me. Demises have taken a lot of my time away from the other groups of patients that I serve, so I hope this trend doesn't continue indefinitely. Know of a few more that are scheduled to deliver in the week ahead, so unfortunately the process is going to be very familiar with all of you. Once again, I do so appreciate the time and attention that you give to the patients. When I follow up with them, they remember your names and the way you help them get through a very difficult time. Now I'm going to say this, I don't know this individual who authored this email, but it sounds to me, as I'm reading it, it sounds as if they are more bothered by the increased workload that these fetal demises create rather than the tragedy of the fetal demises themselves.
Correct. It's very calloused.
Yeah, very. You know, and I understand that there's a certain amount of desensitization that occurs after repeated exposure to things. I'm an ICU nurse. I understand that to a certain degree, right? But what has happened to our humanity, our compassion, and our empathy? These are things that we've come to expect from our nurses. Would you agree?
Yes. I mean, babies are the most vulnerable. People on the planet, and they're given to us by God, and they're given to us with the idea that they're going to bring us love and joy, and they're being robbed from us. And that's evil.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and we can only pray. We can only pray that we are going to return to not just a critical thinking in our country, but a return to compassion and morality among our profession as well. America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on the iHeartRadio network. You can listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best in-class apps available on Apple, Android, or Alexa, 24/7, Great Talk Radio. All of our shows go to podcast the following day. You can hear them on apps such as Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, and many more. Be sure to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts for me. I'll catch you on the other side of this break. Stay with us.
It's time and this is
what. You already know Genesis plus HOCL is your best defense against viruses. But did you also know it's the most powerful weapon for eliminating airborne mold too? Customers are raving about the Genesis Fogger's ability to tackle mold problems and the bad smells that go with them. And we all know mold is a hazard to your health. There's no airborne invader that Genesis can't handle. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity, unlike other supplements that don't work. Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
It was Henry Wadsworth Longfellow that said, "Lives of great men all remind us we can make our lives sublime and departing, leave behind us footprints on the sands of time." America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Time and this is why.
Welcome back to Nurses Out Loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I'm your host, Nurse Kimberly Overton. Wherever you're listening from today and whatever you're doing, I thank you for giving me the gift of your time. Let's jump right back in. If you're just joining us, we've been talking with OBGYN and maternal fetal medicine specialist, Dr. James Thorpe, and registered nurse, Michelle Garshman. I have to say that over the past 2 years, I have lost so much respect for so many in the medical community, including many physicians and nurses who were former colleagues of mine. You know, these were people that I had long trusted, but I have become so disappointed, dismayed, and really disgusted with those in the profession who have completely abdicated from their duty and moral obligation to do no harm. You know, and at this point, I've touched on this with you a couple of days ago, Dr. Thorpe. I refuse to refer or recommend anyone to see an OB. You know, I've been praying over adding a midwifery component to what we are building at Remnant Nursing, so that our members are going to be able to have a safe home birth experience, because I think the majority of women likely can partake in this. But, you know, as we all know, that there are going to be circumstances and high risk pregnancies where a hospital birth would be advisable. Yet so many are literally frightened to go into a hospital. As a nurse, I never thought a day would come when I would advise people to stay away from hospitals, but here we are. You know, we've seen babies medically kidnapped over a positive PCR test. Where do we go from here? Dr. Thorpe, how do we begin to create alternative solutions to provide safe and adequate care for these women?
Well, I was completely serious when I mentioned President Eisenhower and President Kennedy and the statements that they made 65 years ago regarding the medical, military, industrial complex, the government has lost its function. It's no longer a constitutional republic. This is a fascist government bowing their knees to a global regime of globalists that apparently want to depopulate us. So what can we do? We need to destroy them. We need to take them down. We need to finish the job that JFK started and why they killed him. And we should have done it after they murdered President Kennedy. After our government murdered my favorite president, in sent me home from fifth grade classroom crying because Sister Marion Trees came in my classroom and told me my president was murdered. You know, we should have taken care of it as then. We didn't. We put it off. The government put it off. They lied. We need to disassemble the FDA and the CDC and most of our government because they're corrupt. They're terminally corrupt. We need to disassemble a splinter into a thousand pieces, as JFK stated, you know, the CIA, the DARPA, CDC, FDA, American Board of OBGYN, American College of OBGYN, the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine. These people are totally corrupt, totally evil. They have committed the ultimate abomination. They have lined their own pockets while they are pushing, they are censoring physicians and nurses like us, and they are killing our patients, clearly ignoring safety signals that have emanated from their own data. So we, the people, need to stop this. We need to take this evil government and organization down in a way that is, I'm not talking about a revolution. I'm not talking about a civil war. I'm not talking about harming. I'm talking about destroying the evil people by criminal and civil litigation. They have lost their direction. They're terminally corrupt. They need to be destroyed.
Oh, I could not agree with you more. And I'll tell you, I say this all the time. We have the numbers. We have all of the numbers to right this ship, right? But people just lack the courage. And I think, you know, it takes people like us standing up, speaking out to make, and hopefully to inspire courage in others that they are going to be getting up and starting to speak out, because they have to see the atrocities that we're witnessing as well. I don't know what is more frightening to me, that they are just completely complicit in their silence, or that they don't know any better. Which one's more frightening?
Great question.
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, I think in Michelle, we touched on this a little bit earlier, but we were talking about informed consent. And I want to talk about that, because if any doctor or nurse uttered the word safe and effective, that, I mean, there's no way that we could know that. We talked about that earlier. We have no safety data to be able to say safe and effective. So should there not be, and can there not be, some accountability for these physicians or nurses who said the word safe and effective? Personally, I think they should all be stripped of their license.
I agree with you. They should, because the word safe and effective is obviously not true. So if they say it, they're flat out lying. They're not giving true informed consent when they're saying it's safe and effective. And touching on that, if a mother lost a baby, had a fetal demise after receiving her COVID vaccine, I think that every single mother that happened to should call their doctor's office or wherever they got that vaccine, and they should demand answers. They should ask, why didn't you give me true informed consent? Why didn't you tell me that there was a large possibility that I would lose my baby if I took this vaccine? And they really should demand answers, and they really should hold them accountable. I think a lot of these hospitals, they are getting away with not being held accountable, and that they've been doing this for a long time. And it just keeps happening. It's like a programming that they have. And so when they're questioned, you know, people are shut down. And they really, I think that's why people are afraid to stand up because they're silenced all the time. And I think if enough mothers call and really start demanding answers, and there's a whole lot of mothers out there that lost their baby after the shot. So I know that if enough of them start standing up, enough of them start calling, then maybe these doctors and nurses, the people who are supposed to, you know, have your best interest out, maybe they'll finally stop saying it's safe and effective. And maybe they'll really start thinking, maybe these shots are hurting people. I mean, we took an oath to do no harm when we received our licenses. And I think a huge population forgot. And you take an oath to do no harm. That means do no harm. It doesn't mean do no harm unless you're giving a, you know, government mandated COVID shot. It means do no harm.
Oh, exactly. And I think I could have a little bit more, you know, compassion or grace for people who would have, if they just would have said, listen, we don't know. That's what I would tell people when they called. You know, they would call. I had a mom call. She was a breastfeeding mother and her baby was really sick. And she had the question, she posed the question, do you think it's because I got the COVID vaccine? And what I told her was, you know what, we just don't know. We don't have the data to be able to say that that couldn't be the reason. And she got really upset that I would even suggest that it could potentially be from her getting vaccinated. But the truth of the matter is that we did not know because we didn't have the safety data. And I could give some grace if people had just put it that way. Listen, we don't know. Do some risk mitigation. Like, nobody does that anymore. Right. We could have done risk mitigation. And do we think that this, you know, the potential benefit of this shot may have outweighed the risk, then okay, maybe get it. Like if you're elderly or if you have multiple comorbidities, but young, healthy people, especially children who there's a 99.9815% survival rate, they have negligible risk, virtually zero risk of death from COVID. Yet we are trying to mandate these and put them on the CDC schedule. This should be criminal.
It is very criminal.
Yeah, it's
very, very disturbing. As both of you ladies, nurses, eloquently stated, nobody in the world can give informed consent because nobody in the world knows what's in the vaccines. In fact, it's against the law to examine the vaccine content. So the very fact that this doctor pushing or the nurse is pushing or the system pushing, the very fact that the Department of Health and Human Services, through the newly formed COVID-19 Coalition Corps in early 2021, almost 2 years ago, spent over $13 billion, $13 billion to eliminate vaccine hesitancy, that in of itself is proof that their actions are totally unfounded because they're undermining the whole process of informed consent when they're spending $13 billion on campaigns to eliminate vaccine hesitancy in an emergency use authorization drug. That is absolutely the opposite of what they should have been doing. Absolutely the opposite. And, you know, the same can be said. The American College of OBGYN was one of the, they were one of the first joiners of the COVID-19 Coalition Corps. They were one of the first to join. And so they've been giving massive amounts of monies. So monetary, I think that's one of the ways that they've been influenced is by monetary reward, just like the hospitals. You know, somebody gets admitted to the emergency room and they're tagged with a COVID-19 positive test, they get a bonus. They get admitted to the hospital, they get then a second bigger bonus. God forbid they go into the ICU, they get a third, even bigger bonus.
How long has that been going on? Because this incentivized healthcare, it's really kind of something that's new to me. Like, I never realized, you know, I was more on the clinical, like the nursing side of it, and didn't get into all of, you know, the administrative side. But how long has incentivized healthcare like this been taking place? And how is this legal?
That's a great question. I think that ethically, it's clearly illegal because, you know, I remember doing research, 20 years ago, when, we an eyebrow would be raised if we offered a patient gift card to enroll in a study.
Yes.
This is logarithmically worse than that. So I don't know how long it's been going on, but what I do know is that this is the most catastrophic, egregious example of it that you could ever imagine. I'm hearing numbers, these four or five different bonuses that the hospitals get for each individual patient. Of course, it varies from hospital to hospital and from state to state, depending on the complexities of the local and national and federal laws. But it's incomprehensible. I mean, some of these, I've heard numbers that if the patient was on a ventilator and then is put into the morgue, is killed with remdesivir and expires with a diagnosis of COVID-19, you're looking at $200,000 to $300,000 bonus per patient, according to some of the sources that I've studied. So you know this just goes along with this is a military psychological operations warfare, fifth generation warfare that's global, and nobody even knows they're being killed because they're all being misinformed.
Yeah, it's really disturbing for me to sit and watch it happen. And I think that once so many of these nurses, because I know that as nurses, we compartmentalize quite a bit. And I think that once so many of these nurses wake up to what they have been a part of, they are going to need so much support and so much love and grace, because I think I hate to think that any of them realize what's going on. But at this point, it's also getting very difficult to give any grace, because how do you not know what you're a part of at this point? I can almost give a little leeway. In the very beginning of the pandemic, we all thought we were doing the best that we could, but when we know better, we are called upon to do better. And I don't see enough of that happening, which is it's so disturbing to me, as a nurse and just as a human. You don't even have to be a nurse, just as a human, as a person. It's so devastating to see that our humanity has been so lost. And I've worked in healthcare for 26 years, and I have long known that hospital systems place profits over patients. That part is really not that new to me and not that surprising, but I never thought that we were at a point where we were systematically murdering patients for profit. But that's what's happening.
It is. You're right. Yep, they have a bounty on their life as soon as they step into the hospital.
Yeah, and I mean, I've got some serious PTSD from my time there, because those patients that I knew, did not need to die. It really has been difficult for me to deal with, because I was watching these people get sicker and sicker and sicker, and then coming to the realization that it was not COVID that was killing them, as they were telling us. It was actually the
remdesivir.
It was the remdesivir. It was the medical mismanagement, the fact that we weren't treating this inflammatory process with the high doses of steroids. They were giving such subclinical doses. I mean, we may as well just spit on them. It would have done about as much good. So yeah.
And then isolating their families so that the patient feels like distraught and confused, and they lose their will to survive because they're isolated. And like, my mother always had people around. She loved people, and she was very generous, had a lot of friends, and then they completely isolated her for 2 weeks.
And they even take the nursing staff away, because they were encouraging us as nurses to be pretty much, go in and get out, cluster your care, get in the room and do as much as you can, then get out, limit your exposure. I mean, once you're exposed, you're exposed. That's ridiculous.
Right.
I used to spend plenty of time in the room with my COVID patients. In fact, more than I normally would, because of the fact that they didn't have family there. I felt like they were so isolated. And even when they were, intubated and sedated, I still wanted my presence in that room with them. I can remember it was about like around Christmas time, and probably, and this one particular patient that I recall, and he did survive. He was one of the very few that, because, once you're on the ventilator, you have that 80% chance you're not coming off. But this one particular patient did survive. And I can remember being in there. I felt bad for him after, because I was singing Christmas carols too.
Well, God bless you.
That didn't really sound too good, I'm sure, but but you know, it's important as nurses for us to provide that comfort to them, and to even, and I hate when nurses don't narrate their care, especially with a sedated patient, because they can hear. They are
aware
of what's going on. So can you imagine being like sedated and not, and just having people kind of just come up to you and start doing all of these things and not even, you know, providing any explanation as to who you are and some reassurance that you're safe and that you're there to take care of them. I would see that in the newer kind of generation of nurses, they would just go in and do whatever because they don't feel like the patient is aware.
Right. And they're very robotic. So yeah. I'm sure it felt very robotic for the people laying in the bed intubated. And yes, I do believe that your subconscious knows what's going on at all times. And to have people come in and just do things to your body and then just leave must feel so isolating.
Yeah. And I've heard many patients after the fact. I remember I had a patient that I had her in the ICU, and when I had come in the following shift, she had peripherally been extubated and she was awake and aware. And so I told her, I said, hi, I know I wanted to reintroduce myself. I said, I took care of you last night, but I wanted to introduce myself because, you know, now that you're awake. And she said, no, I remember you. She said, I remember your voice. And I said, I remember you holding my hand and telling me that, you know, everything was going to be okay. And
that's sweet.
And I was blown away by that because she literally told me things that I had said to her and remembered me holding her hand and all of that. So,
wow. Yeah. Don't That's amazing.
Ever, yeah. Don't ever discount don't. That those patients can hear you and they can understand and they have an awareness. So, it's disheartening when you see these nurses just not having, you know, any type of just compassion and care for these patients. I mean, that's why I think the majority of us got into nursing to begin with.
Right. And I mean, definitely that's why I got into nursing, is because I do truly care. You know, my mother was a great mother and she was always taking care of people too. And she taught me how to take care of people. So it came to me easily, you know, when I started nursing. But I see a lot of nurses, I do see them as robotic. They, you know, they're just there doing their job, check off lists, stuff like that.
You know, and I think that is just more evidence of this. It's really by design. This system is designed in such a way that it really doesn't allow for us to nurse in the way that we want to. You know,
right.
It's just one task after another, one checkbox after another. And I've heard people talk about like the electronic health record, they said, oh, it's not user friendly and it's really, you know, it doesn't seem to help us in our job. And there's a reason for that. And it's because these systems are not geared towards patient care and safety. They're geared towards medical billing and reimbursement. That's why they're not user friendly. That's why nurses don't understand why we have to do certain things or why this is helpful, because it's not geared towards patient care at all. It's just geared towards reimbursement. And that is just a sad reality of this system. And again, the way that it's designed, that doesn't allow us to, it doesn't allow us to be the nurses that we wanted to be. And it's sad.
Right. It's very sad. But I know, you mentioned you are coming up with something to do, like patient-centered care, and, you know, where we treat the patient as an individual. I think that's brilliant. I think that it's definitely needed. And I just imagine that, and, you know, we're just in a transitioning phase right now, and we're going to get, the world's going to realize that what we're doing right now, the hospital system is not working. And I just hope that it balances out and we have, you know, places where people can go and get real care and real help, and where it's not censored or where it's not robotic. That's my hope anyway.
And I think we're going to get there. We've been working really tirelessly over the past, you know, year and a half almost. But when I started Nurse Freedom Network, my larger vision was just to be able to create opportunities for nurses to be able to break away from this. The system is completely broken. It's unsustainable. Mm-hmm. It is unfixable. You know, I always say this, and people don't like what I do, but I don't care. It needs to burn to the ground, right? But as we let it burn to go to the ground, we've got to stop putting out the flames. We've been doing that forever. We need to stop begging for change that's never coming. It's never coming. We need to build something alongside of this that is really going to focus on this true patient-centered care and really creating an environment where all of us, as nurses, as physicians, as patients, where we can all thrive. And I think that it's coming. I keep hearing people talk about it, and I said, you know what, we need to not talk about it anymore. We just need to do it. We all recognize, and we've recognized for a really long time, that this needs to happen. And that's great, but now we need to do it. We need to get on board. And that's what I'm trying to do with Remnant Nursing. And I'm really excited because so many people have really wanted to come on board. They see the value in what we're building and creating. And I couldn't feel more blessed than that people are ready. You know, they yeah. are beyond ready for this.
I'm ready. And I'm so happy to hear that you're doing that because it's literally my dream. You know, I've been thinking the same thoughts for the last couple of years. And I'm like, man, when I just need to get my own wellness clinic going and just treat people and truly heal them, you know, get to the source. And man, just to hear that you're already starting something like this, I'm so excited and yeah. so grateful.
We want you on board for this because I tell you, you know, when we do, yes, we see everybody, but we specialize in the consultation and care of vaccine injured because, you know, unfortunately there are going to be so many, this number is going to grow exponentially as they're continuing, right, to give these boosters without any regard for the obvious harm that they're causing. They continue to give them. So those numbers are going to continue to rise, and nobody is taking care of these people. So the benefit of this is really twofold because it does provide that care for these people who have all been abandoned by their medical communities. And it also creates opportunities for healthcare professionals who are just ready to get out of this system and start providing true patient care without the moral injury that comes along with being in this profession these days.
Yeah, I am super excited. I love that you're doing this. I think it's going to benefit so many people.
Absolutely. And I look forward to working with both of you, you know, moving forward to find solutions for the many who are suffering and to be able just to create a safe environment for our patients once again. Dr. Jim yeah. Thorpe and Michelle Garshman, thank you so much for joining us today and for having the courage to take this stand.
Kimberly, thank you so much for having us. And I speak from my perspective. Your platform is incredible. You're saving my patients' lives. And Miss Young Nurse Michelle, the same to you, sister. Thank mm-hmm. you very much.
Thank you so much. We appreciate both of you. And that's all the time that we have for today, friends. But remember, we are here on the air 5 days a week, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern with a different nurse host daily. You can also catch the encore at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We all must do our part and share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, and videos so we can help secure America's future. Tune in tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time as I hand off the baton to Nurse Michelle. We are in a war for the truth. We are putting out a bounty on the real misinformation and exposing the purveyors of propaganda. Join us weekdays with a different nurse host daily. No topic is off limits as we shine our lights and expose the darkness.
It's time.